is actually quite important to...
Today is August 24, 2022. This is a Grand Canyon Oral History with Paul Mullen, M-U-L-L-E-N, and his wife Robin, R-O-B-I-N. Kim Beesom is here. My name is Tom Martin. We are about ready to look at the dock and the wee red jet boats with Paul and Robin and Kim.
Thank you.
A-M.
Sorry, say again.
A-M, not E-N.
M-U-L-L-A-N, not E-N. Thank you.
It was when...
Let's see if you can find them.
Actually, it was when... I'm not sure which one. That's we read there. That'll be Doc, will it?
Yes.
When my grandfather came out when he was one from Ireland, it was A-N, but the Americans all spelled it E-N.
Huh.
So there's a lot of my relations are E-N in this country that I don't really know.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens, isn't it?
Tom, you can, if you want to help, we can,
uncover it. Let's get in and open them up, and I'll ask Paul to help, too.
Yeah.
We're going to walk around this way.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk around this way. Why don't you just take it and let it come right out the back, Kim? Let's do the whole deal.
Okay.
Yeah. What are you seeing? What are you thinking?
I guess the first reminder is that it's right-hand drive, and all jet boats in New Zealand are left-hand drive, which is kind of interesting, but that's what it is. I'm not even sure why it was that they went with that, except that these boats were actually made in America, and the boats were put together with jet units that were made under license to Hamilton's by the Indiana Gearworks. And John Bueller was the man behind that. And my understanding of it's these will be a two-stage Colorado. Yeah, two-stage Colorado, and the there'll be a two-stage Chinook.
So hang on, explain that to me.
So it's got a two-stage, which means it's got two impellers in it.
That's here in the pump that we're looking at.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the difference between a Chinook and a Colorado?
Okay, so I'm jumping ahead of myself here. The Colorado, the Chinook was quite an expensive unit to build, jet unit or pump, as it would be called here. And I know that after this trip, they decided they wanted to try and make one that was more cost effective. And George Davison, who actually, he visited here about 5 years ago.
Did he write that article? Was that
I'm not sure. He wrote an article for me for the magazine, which was in the magazine. And I do remember photos of him with his family standing here in front of Wee Red. It's kind of ironic calling it Wee Red, isn't it? It's a monster of a boat. Wee in New Zealand is little, and that's where it comes from. But
compared to the twins,
which are 24 foot, this is 18. But see, an 18 foot jet boat in New Zealand would be a you'd very rarely see a river boat that's 18 foot long in New Zealand. It's too long, unless it was a race boat, but then it would only have two seats and it'd be a long, long boat. It's a completely different idea. But anyway, getting back to this, the jet unit, they needed to make a cheaper jet unit, so they found a way to make it more cost effective, and they called that unit the Colorado, because it was after 1960, and it was off the back of this trip that they called it the Colorado. So this would be a licensed Chinook. I have a look at that, but they called them turbocraft here. Indiana Gearworks. Interesting, doesn't actually say what it is, but it'll be a
people in the boats, please.
Sorry?
Don't publish pictures of people in the boats.
No, that's
please.
Right. That's
I know.
Right. Yeah.
It's just,
the interesting thing is, when we found Wee Red, she was in absolutely original condition. And I know, I remember seeing pictures at the end, and one of the things that I was so, is that we had lost one of the willow pegs off here. There were little willow pegs on there, and that's a cool part of the story, because the boats didn't have bungs. They've got ballast tanks in them, air ballast tanks in here, but as soon as they hold them, they couldn't get the water out. So they drilled a hole in the back of the boat here and got little pieces of willow, and there was one of the willows was actually hanging on here when we found it. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I remember looking at that, and I held it up, and I said to Paul, who was with me, I said, just look at that. That little piece of willow has been here since 1960.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if it turns up in the boat or anywhere, that's what it was.
Paul, what do you think this is?
Speedo.
Say again?
Speedometer.
Really?
Yeah, so basically there's a piece missing off the bottom of the...
Here?
Yeah, piece missing off there. This would go onto here, okay. And then there's a piece hanging down in the water that would... the water would run past, and it would read velocity. The trouble is it's hanging down out the back of a boat, and with all the rocks and everything that would be around, it would get broken really easily.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then I just noticed these tubes here.
So
they're
just your exhaust, yeah. Okay. So it's off that 185 horsepower will be a Ford, a 272 cubic inch Ford Interceptor. So it was an early Ford, and a pre-runner to the 289 and other engines that it went on to be, but that was the basis of the Ford Interceptor.
And this is going to be water cooled, is that right?
Totally, it's water cooled. This one is raw water cooled, though, I'm going to say.
Raw water meaning?
Raw as in using the water out of the river. So okay. It's not running a heat exchanger where you would use heat exchanger would be like, instead of using air in a car radiator to cool the water in the engine, what you're using is the water coming off. So that smaller black pipe coming out there,
yep.
That'll come off the back of the jet pump. So okay. The water's got, the pump's got pressure in it of probably 100 PSI.
Huh.
And that water would be being forced up there, and it'll be coming into the front of the engine here, be split and coming in here,
okay.
Go through the engine. It'll then come out the top of the engine here,
yep.
And thermostat will be in one of these.
Okay.
And that's a thermostat there. Just a sensor for the
temperature gauge. Yep.
Water will come out here into the water cooled exhaust, yep. Along here to this point, and at that point they go. They drop down. At one point after they've dropped, they will join with the gases, and the water will be expelled out the back.
So the cooling water goes out with the
exhaust.
And it
works. It does a twofold thing. It obviously cools the engine, keeps the exhaust. That's why the rubbers aren't burning, because it's got water running down it. It's hot water, but it won't be boiling.
Right.
And that water also has an effect on the noise and stops it making quite so much noise.
Fascinating. I had no idea that the cooling water came in under... Under pressure.
Yeah. Well,
the pump's
got around 100 psi in it, so so it's got, that's how we get our propulsion.
So we're going to go off in a little rabbit hole here. When the boat is at idle,
yep.
Is there still enough water coming out of the pump to cool to get water in the engine?
Yeah, it would be.
Wow. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Now there's a drive shaft here.
Yeah. So that is the drive shaft, and what. It was funny because I remember John climbing into this, because all of the life jackets were sitting in the boat still. Yeah. So they were all just literally, all flopped around. It was quite funny looking at it, because you could imagine the container that it was in was a wooden box, and it was about this high. And John's almost 80, and he's climbing in through here over the top. He goes, "Oh, yeah, this is we ready," saying, "Oh, jet unit still turns," and he's turning that. And he said, "Oh, drive shaft's being disconnected." So that's the drive shaft that connects the unit to the back of the engine. So I can't see the other end of it, but I'm assuming it's about that long.
It's about that long.
Okay. So that bit bolts on to the back of the engine here.
Yep.
That bit bolts on there. You start the engine, it turns the unit. So... jet pump, mm-hmm. as opposed to a normal to any other kind of boat, when you want to go in reverse, you have to stop the engine, put it geared into reverse, then restart the engine. Whereas this, it's running the whole time, whether it's in forward, neutral, or reverse, and you just got a bucket.
The gate in the back.
This is a very early unit, so it won't have a bucket. So the bucket didn't come around until a little bit later, but this one, it has a... In here, I don't know where it'll be, but on the column?
Yep.
I suspect...
So on the steering column, on the left side, there is a chrome rod coming up. I wanted to ask you about control.
So when I move that, you should see...
It looks like it's trying to move here.
Yes. A gate's trying to move up or down?
It's trying to move to the right or the left, and when you do that...
That's steering. It'd be...
You pull this deflector into...
Is that working right?
Yeah, it's tight. It's thinking about it.
So there should be a little blade that's running up and down. If you looked inside the nozzle...
I think it's down. I think it'll lift. It's supposed to lift up.
Yeah. So it may not be totally working, but...
Yeah, it's
the idea is that...
a little hole at the top.
Yeah, there's a gate. Oh, okay, it's down now. So the hole
reversed.
Is blocked.
Okay.
So that's what that's doing, is it's putting a block across the water that's coming out. So now the water's going to go out the bottom.
So there's a block here, isn't it? I assume that it was these things actually, but this turns.
This is the steering.
It would steer it.
Got
it.
That's your steering.
I see.
Yeah, just try that, Robin. Yeah. So that's your steering.
Yep.
Pretty sloppy, but that's basically how the steering happened, and it always was sloppy. So this thing here, that's your reverse.
Oh,
so that
turns,
and that hole, that plate that's in there will lift up and let the water come out. Now at the moment,
it's down.
Yeah, it probably needs a bit of TLC just to get.
Okay,
it,
so
get
with that being down, I see there's a gate here which would let some water through, and it would kind of be pointing down a little bit.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like it would actually pull the boat backwards.
Oh, no, it would. You know what? They were, at best, they were a good neutral. They weren't really ever very successful. And interestingly, Doughty, and they were the Canadian, I think, and UK agents. So they were the licensee in the UK. They came up with the reverse bucket. And the reverse bucket literally hangs off the side here.
Okay.
Came up like that, and it was a big bucket. And when you put reverse on, it came down like that. The water came out, hit it, and went underneath.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. And John had talked about this gate coming down at the top
Correct.
Of lava.
Correct.
That makes
sense.
So
he would have lost all of his forward
ability
momentum.
Ability to go forward. And I guess they wired that up.
Yeah.
I don't know how they did it, but...
So well, it will be something. It'll be. They could have wired it up inside, underneath, but they could have also simply just wired it up here. I think this has been a part, because this has got all new bolts in it.
Okay.
These wouldn't have had fancy stainless steel bolts in them in their day. So
okay.
I suspect this has been a part, and I'd almost say that that's in back to front.
Oh, it's backwards.
Yeah, it may be. I'd need to know.
You
need to pull it apart to find out. It doesn't matter, but nobody's ever going to, it's not going to ever run.
And how does that linkage from that shaft there get back to turn?
I don't know. On
this
these,
thing here.
Well, I don't know how they've done it on these. It's not that one, is it?
So that would be throttle, maybe?
Yeah, hand throttle.
Right?
Oh, yes, you're dead right. They had hand throttles on these. See, we all run a foot throttle, but these had hand throttles. You're dead right.
So I can see the throttle cable right there.
Yeah, it's not. Neither of them is moving. They'll just be seized up.
Right.
I would say it's hand throttle. That's
okay.
What that is. Yeah. Yep.
And that. Yeah.
Wow.
It probably would come out your side. Sorry, Robin.
No, you're up.
Chasing you down. You should be able to.
How long has it been here, Kim?
How long has it been here? It's post 2003, but.
It'd actually be post 2004, because that's when we did the dock. That's when I filmed it.
Okay.
It would have been about May 2004.
It does have some patches on it.
When you guys were at Page, that was in 2004?
Glen Canyon, yeah, at the works yard in Glen Canyon.
Yep.
And that's where, but
that's where it was. Interestingly, we're told nobody really knew what it was. They just knew it was important, and it had, because it had Archive Number 1 written on the box, sitting in the back corner of the Glen Canyon. So nobody really, when we looked at it, we knew straight away what it was. And it, I guess it probably confirmed what everybody knew, was that it was We Read.
Yeah, so we started this conservation project of having the boats clean in 2003. That's why I know it was post that.
Yeah.
And then at that point, Glen Canyon said, hey, look, can we pass this boat on to you?
Yep.
Because it's just sitting in a garage up here, so or a shed. And so,
yep.
Do you think these are some of the original
life jackets? Yeah, they are. Because these are 1960s life jackets. I've got some at home exactly
the
same.
They look very much like in the film. These guys take
them
off. No,
this is
them.
They're like a Hutch Wilco. They're Hutch Wilco out of New Zealand, but I don't know. Yeah, but that's what they are for sure.
They don't have a maker's mark on them.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
Model AK-1. But that's the principle of all the life jackets in the 60s.
Okay. Oh, now maybe the little bit of wood is in there.
Well, hey, I doubt it. Nobody would. You'd have to be. You wouldn't let it go.
Oh, no, not if it. But it might not have made it here. You
that's
know
what I
when
mean.
They packed it up.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
I just don't know.
I just saw it and went, oh, wow, look
I've
at that.
I've never looked in there. Have you ever looked in there, Kim? Let's see.
I think the conservator put everything in there.
Ah, that would make sense.
I think this could be just remains of a cover.
So to go up the rapids, they would have put the cover.
They had a cover on there,
and
it, was,
it went across the back of the seats.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and it was hooked onto here.
Yeah.
And so that
like a cloth cover.
No, it would have been probably would have been proper canvas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the idea was when the water came over.
So it wouldn't have covered this half.
I can't remember, Rob, whether it did.
It covered out.
Yeah, and up to
there. I
don't
know how they hooked it on. Maybe they hooked it on here on this thing. But the, all you can see is...
It's a little hole.
Is a little hole for the driver. That's it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they had anything except the cowling over the engine to keep it from making a lake of water.
Well, you know, we thought that maybe over the years that pieces had been lost, you know, before they got here, but... Buzz Belknap was here at one point, and he was on that trip. He said, "We threw everything out that you know to lighten the weight." He said, "We threw the cover." He according to him, they threw everything
that
into the river.
That wouldn't surprise me at all because the weight was a huge, huge issue. And keep in mind that I don't think Doc. This is the only boat to go down and up. Doc was one of the two boats that joined in at Lake Mead because it was Wee Yellow and Wee Red that went down, and Wee Yellow Fireball sank Wee Yellow on the way upstream, so she never made it. And the sad thing with that was that she was carrying lots of the film for the movie.
Yes.
And that's why there were two films being made, and the big film didn't get made, I don't think, because most of the footage got lost, and it was only really the smaller one that Guy Mannering did. That actually got produced, which
and
is
Buzzy had film, Ed Iansen had film, and all that film went together to make the one that
the
John
one that does exist, that's right,
together.
And that kind of, I mean, I've done some extra pieces to that, some add-ons, interviews with people that were involved, so while they were still alive, because at the time I did that, we still had Phil Smith, John Hamilton, Joyce, Margie Mannering, and lots of the other guys were still around. But I spoke to all four of those on camera, and they were on that. We called it the 50th celebration. And there was a book that came out, the new version of Whitewater that Tony Keane did. And we've now, when I say we, Jet Boat World, we've got the last of those, and we sell them with a DVD, that 50th DVD. Mm.
Or look at the dock.
Yeah, always interesting. This one I have seen close up, but I certainly haven't seen Doc. because I think at that stage Doc would have been somewhere else up at Glen Canyon. The thing I find really, I might just get some photos of this before we cover it back up. One of the beauties of the Weber would have been that the fiberglass patches that they put on would have gone off like so quick, whereas normally you'd be waiting 24 hours, 48 hours for the fiberglass to go off. But obviously, you know, the deck split off the top there, plus numerous, well, it wasn't numerous times, but I know in Vulcan, John hit, there were rocks that got hit on this side, and the chines got pretty badly knocked around.
That's the other thing I wanted to look at, was the underside of the boat, because they push this thing pretty hard.
Yeah.
Up there it is. There's the repair spot down there.
Yeah, there are a couple of holes. But the chines would have got smacked around a lot on rocks.
Right. Well, there's a couple chine repairs down there, right next to you.
I remember seeing the boat, you know, on its
side.
Oh,
that's a recent kind of, that didn't happen on the river, but.
No,
ding
yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
But these were.
That's interesting. That's got quite a bit of wood in it, hasn't it?
Well, it does, doesn't it? I'm looking at this going, wow, it looks like there's wood there, huh?
No, it's just crunched the fiberglass.
You think so? Okay. Because I didn't think. Well, there may be wood, actually.
There'll be wooden bearers in it. So there'll be wooden bearers that run right up the middle, and the engine's bolted to wooden bearers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ah, all right. Yeah, George Morrison at the top of Lava said, we're abandoning this boat. And the other guy said, no, we're not. We're fixing it up. And he said it again at Dubendorf after
fireball.
Who said
that? Doc Marsden?
No, Morrison. George Morrison.
George Morrison, right.
After Austin got hurt, Morrison became the commander, in quotes, from Beeler, from Turbocraft.
Yeah.
And he was like, we're ditching this boat. And everybody else is like, no, we're not.
No,
we need these boats to try to keep going.
Well, you need them
river.
To go up, but this would be, you know, like, and they wouldn't have been thinking about it from the point of view of historical, but the historical relevance of one of the only boats to go up and down.
But these bolts are really curious. Clearly, they knew that the deck was going to come away from the hull, and they put these, they my thinking is they might have put these actually in at the top of Vulcan once they tried to rebuild it from the wreck.
No, I don't think so. I don't know.
So do you think this was an add-on to deflect water?
That's definitely an add-on for the water, Robin, but it went on before.
Yep.
I can't remember. It may have been that these got put on at the bottom. So they went downstream with the windscreen. All the windscreens got blown off, but they knew they had to deflect water. So these are for deflecting water that comes over the front. So can you see under there, Tom?
Yeah.
Well, there's some sort of really interesting structural member here. And they're trying to hook these to the structural member that's underneath here.
Okay, well, that's what that is then, yeah. Yeah, so that's been done on the fly.
On the fly.
Okay, so the reason for that is the deck, the integrity of the deck relies on joining here. If this has been crunched, they've lost the integrity of the deck, so this would have been floppy. So they've got something between there and there, have they?
Yeah, there's some sort of an underneath structure
that's
here.
That's what
like
they've done. They've tied this bit back to here because there's no way it would have the strength when water hits here, it will just push that up, and it would, and that's what originally split this. But this is a massive fiberglass job here.
Huge. Huge attempt to repair.
It doesn't look much when you see it in a film, but when you see it like this, you realise that, I mean, there's no way that would come off.
Right. Yeah, they did an
so they've just
job.
Cut the, they've obviously cut the gunwale capping away.
Yep.
Here they haven't even, hang on. Oh, they've gone over the gunwale. No,
right.
I think they've just
here
they've
they
got
cut
a,
it away.
No, I think you'll find this is a cap that goes over the top of the gunwale.
It looks like
right.
It's
they have,
gone.
They pulled the.
Right.
I would say it got ripped off and broken, so they've cut it off back there.
That
whereas here,
sense.
I'd say they put these on as precautionary when they lost that side.
That would make sense.
Oh.
What can you see, Rob? Amazing, isn't it? So this is just a local supplier that would have put these on.
Can't see. No, I think your camera might be better.
Okay.
Oh, there's some photos on the floor. Some repairs.
So we're taking the plastic off the dock. This has a little, these buckles here.
Oh, no, all they've done, so that is the deck. All they've done is that, so what's happened is the deck has come away from the frame.
Okay.
Over that side.
Oh.
So all that is, they're just big washers.
Mm-hmm.
To hold the, but then those will be big coach bolts, and they have under there. There's a 4x2,
yep.
Or, yeah, 4x3,
mm-hmm.
and I'd say what they've done is they've literally screwed big coach bolts down into the existing subframe to hold this part of the deck from coming off. That's
and,
all. That
and
is.
The subframe actually helps keep the hull flared out a bit, or is it just
no? The basically. All it's to do is to stop this, is to make this solid enough to walk on.
Ah.
And it also, what happens is, as soon as this doesn't flex, as soon as this is solid,
right.
Then what you put in here, what you join on here, and this is all pop, would be pop riveted all the way around here,
okay.
It's suddenly extremely strong.
Got it.
Got nothing. But the moment you break that, what's happened is water's hit it underneath, and it's lifted this, and it's literally peeled it. It's glassed onto the fiberglass underneath, but it's peeled it off, so it's no longer attached. So all they've done is they've bolted it back on to hold it on. When you have a look at the photo here,
okay,
you can actually see it quite clearly.
Come check it out, Kim. Paul, come over here.
Hey, stay there, Kim. Stay there.
Oh.
So on top, I'll show you. Right, so on top we've got those, right? And they've just screwed them down into they're bolts that go right through.
Okay.
So what they've done, and they've glassed in here as well,
yeah.
But basically this bit had lifted off the frame when they hit a big wave, and all that's happened is that they have to bolt it back on they've just attached it, bolted it through big washers, wooden washers, because that's all they would have had, top and bottom, and that's just holding the deck on.
Hey, Paul, can you move that picture? See this? See, they almost look like little skylights.
It's just that is just because it's the gel coat, the red gel coat's missing.
Ah,
right. So they have probably glass doesn't hold over gel coat as well as it does over glass. So they would have, you can see where they've chiseled it or rasped it back. So they would have rasped all the way back to the fiberglass, and that's just glass over. So because there's no gel coat over it, that's way bigger strength, but that's why it just looks like a light.
A stronger bond.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Awesome. Now this is interesting. This looks like been rasped.
Same thing. They've just ground that out of the way
So
that when they put glass on, it's going to hold, and it's not just going to peel up as soon as the first bit of water hits it, and it will just literally peel it straight off the gel coat.
Okay.
Because gel coat's quite slippery. They make it and they put a releasant in the mold to get it to pop out of the mold. So you would never glass over gel coat unless it was an absolute emergency.
Okay.
You'd always try and get it back to the fiberglass underneath.
And so when the wee yellow came apart in
So I can't remember what happened in Grapevine. Didn't she just open up?
Yeah. So Fireball had wrecked that boat in Dubendorf downstream.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, Morrison's like, we're abandoning the boat. They were like, no, we're going to fix it up. And they did. But it was fast. And I don't know if they gave it as much attention as this one got.
I don't think it did. From what John kind of talked loosely about it. But he was always very, I was going to say cavalier is not the right word. He was very nonchalant about everything. Yeah, you know, it was like, oh yeah, well, we just lost the boat, you know. Like, for him, it was like it was just another day in the office.
You know, this is attached here.
Oops, hang on a second. It's on your side.
There you go.
Okay. We're good.
Oh no, that's interesting. So they painted the deck on this one.
Well, this one was used by the Park Service for after the trip.
Yeah, but I think Doc was this color though. He was blue.
So Doc went to Lake Mead with the Belknaps, and they eventually gave it to Lake Mead National Recreation Area, and it was used there for a while.
Right.
How it got? Did it come here from Mead, or did it come here from Page?
From Mead.
From Mead.
From
okay.
Mead, yeah. So, engine, different engine.
What do you see?
That's a Fireball V8. So that's a.
This is a Gray Marine. That's a Ford. That's an Interceptor over there in red.
Yeah, I don't know. This is actually a bigger engine. It's interesting. But keeping in mind that this is, I'm assuming that Wee Yellow would have been the same engine as that one. But I think this is a bigger engine. It's got twin carburetors.
Oh. Okay.
Yep.
So for this one, the controls here are
a little
different.
Yeah, that should be throttle. Just move that. Does it move at all?
Yep. It's trying to move.
Yeah, there you go. The accelerator's moving. So that's your accelerator. Now, interestingly, let's have a look at the reverse on this one.
So in the dock here, the throttle is a lever on the right against the right kind of frame.
Yep.
And that on the Wee Red, there's a plunge push for throttle on the right, to the right of the steering wheel. So Robin's going to move the reverse.
So do you reckon that they've got the reverse?
Just
it's
on the other way around. So just put the reverse.
No, that one.
On,
that one's doing.
Wheel rock.
Yeah, try that one.
Just move that.
No, it can't.
Okay, but Tom, you can actually see it. It's open here, so you can see that it's not all the way down.
But Robin, what you're doing, I hear go clunk clunk back here.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Or maybe not.
Was try that... it again, Rob. No,
it'll be
seized up. So
that's this thing.
Yeah, that's right. So this thing's got a turn, and it turns that lever, and that goes up and down.
Yeah, and I can see that gate is all the way up here, and it just drops down, slides down in front of the pump.
There. Notice how you haven't got the holes in the bottom of this one?
No.
Right, because
it didn't get crunched.
It hasn't been crunched.
Right.
Now keep in mind also.
Oh, so here's the speedometer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a bit of it, yeah.
Okay.
So keep in mind that this boat only did the upstream. That one did downstream, but also a whole lot of upstream, because that was John's boat. So he would test the rapids. That boat spent a lot of time in lava on the way down.
Yes.
So they turned around and went back up to see whether, because they were really worried that they wouldn't get up lava. So they actually had a shot at it a few times, and I think that was at the point that John sort of went, this is doable.
Mm.
But that may have been the point that they went, we've got to be light. You know, and that might have been where they started going when they got down the bottom. I don't know that they necessarily chucked stuff out into the river, but I suspect when they got down the bottom to turn around to come upstream, because keep in mind that the big boats had all the fuel, had all the supplies, they'd cached all of that, and the girls weren't allowed to go upstream. They were, all weight had to go, so the girls went on the rim, and it wouldn't surprise me if as much as we wouldn't be even taking fuel in there now, but in those days, you know, like if you left a can in there, probably nobody would have worried about it, but you wouldn't do that now. But I'm sure they wouldn't have just thrown stuff out of the boat on the way down. I think that once they got to Mead, at that point they spent time on the lake, because I think they did work on the boats trying
spent
to get them
a week
to
there.
Go quicker,
They did a lot of work on them to try and do that, and that's when they bedded these two new boats. There was, now I'm going to get caught on a dock and
Kiwi.
Kiwi, of course, yeah. So Kiwi was the second boat to go back up. That's right.
Where is the Kiwi?
Don't know.
That's the question.
Don't know. I don't even know. Don't know where those two big cathedrals are either.
Yes, that's another question. Where do they go?
Yeah. I mean, it's remarkable that we've got these, to be honest. It's wonderful that we have. You know, like, the museum that we've got is, it is a trust, but it's privately held. We've established it partly because of my passion and partly because of the passion of two others that are really into this, and neither of them really know that this wasn't originally part of the plan, so I didn't make a big fuss about coming over here, but this is kind of a big deal for Wee Red, because any jet boater in New Zealand knows about Wee Red.
Well, so the last guy who came and wrote the article, he said, once I publish this article, you'll have every New Zealander in the world coming to see him. And I said, all right, well, we'll transcribe your letter,
so,
you know.
It's interesting you should say that, Kim, because Robin and I have been running tours on Route 66 since 2011, 2012. And we base ourselves in Williams. We come out here. We go to the screening at the Grand Canyon screening
IMAX.
on the IMAX,
oh.
And then we take our people out and we have a little picnic dinner right on the rim as the sun goes down. Take all the photos, and we have driven past Wee Red all that time.
But you did one time. You did try and find out where it was.
Yeah, in my head I had that she was in storage somewhere up at Page. So it was never. I never thought of her being in this part of the world. I didn't understand that, and it wasn't until I was talking to Tom, and the penny dropped. And I went, "Why me? That means we've been driving past her all that time." So, two things have come out of that. One is for our trips that we do once a year, one group up, one group back. New Zealanders that are jet boat mad would love the opportunity just to come in and see her. And the other is that because this time round's a bit of a recce for us because of COVID, we haven't been here for 3 years, so we've got a whole heap of people that want to do the road. We're not going to be able to get them away, and we're wondering about doing a shorter trip as well, that kind of what we've been doing, and call it kind of a canyon, so sort of take in Zion, maybe Bryce, and then come down through Grand Canyon and just a run down today, you know, along the rim, with somebody who knows something about it that could tell us. And come here and then head out maybe to Sedona and head then up to Santa Fe and follow the Route 66 back into LA. So it's more just a short loop, not going completely east. So we're looking at doing that as well, and I know there'd be lots of jet boaters that would be really keen to do that. So if we could tee something up on a particular time, and it'll be, you know, we'd be able to say, look, we've got an hour here, is it possible? There'd be people that well, I wouldn't say they'd die for it, but they'd be pretty impressed if they could get a look at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, check back with us, especially if you're willing to talk about it, because, you know, we've had people ask about, like, us giving, and we had to draw the line. We had too many people. We had to draw the line on them dropping their people off and us spending, you know, like, they're paying
totally.
You.
Yeah.
We can't do that.
No.
But
you're okay, because it would be me. I would be talking to them about it.
Yeah.
Benefit of that for you is that if you happen to be here, Robin's from Australia, right? So, you know, her investiture in this is through me, but she knows, she takes people through Jet Boat World, and she will know more about Bill Hamilton than most people in New Zealand does, you know, just because she's been listening to us give the tours and talking with, you know, the history of it. And the same with Wee Red. I mean, I only know about it, I guess, because I did that original doco, and we kind of discovered her on camera, which looks great. I'm sure everybody we kind of knew, but nobody had actually set out to reveal it.
Mm-hmm,
So she does show up, you know, reasonably regularly in stories that we do. And certainly since George came over and did that story, because I asked George to write that story for me, and it was really wonderful. I don't know whether you're aware, but he is actually the person who did all the inventing. So
is
Bill,
that right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I,
like,
if I recall correctly, I thought he said that he was supposed to be on that trip, but then he got called off to in Indonesia or something.
Yep, that's
like that.
Correct. Yeah, he was. Yeah, and interestingly, so what happened was, very briefly on that history. So Bill Hamilton is down at Irishman Creek in the middle of the Mackenzie Basin, as far outback as you can get. Nobody's around. Has his factory there. Brings in a generator to make electricity so that he can make machinery. Does all his heavy machinery work all around the, you know, all around the country. Does all of that. When he's 53, by now the company's running in Christchurch, so in the big metropolis. Employs upwards of 500 people, one of the biggest engineering companies in New Zealand. He retires back to Irishman Creek, to where it all started. And he's pottering on this concept of how he can go upstream against the current. And that was what it was all about. It was, and that's why the doco's called Against the Flow. Because it was about how he used to watch the little pheo ducks. And pheo ducks had big webbed feet and they swim upstream in rapids. And he used to look at them and go, there's got to be a way to do that. Because he got sick and tired as a kid in his little rowboat or canoe going down the rapid, and then he had to tow it back up, and he hated that. And he had said, there's got to be a way to go upstream. So roll the clock, you know, forward to, you know, when he's 53, goes back to Irishman Creek, and he's pottering with ideas, gets an airboat to start with as a concept. That doesn't work. Then goes to Popular Mechanics magazine that had a Hanley hydrojet, which they used on the East Coast, and they'd stick out the bottom of the boat and they'd suck water up and they'd blow them out, but they could actually kind of turn the boats a bit with it. Very primitive, didn't really work. And it was off that he got the idea, built a kind of a rough jet unit, and he actually built 7 of them. We've got one at our place. And it was at that point that he was obviously bothering John Hamilton, who was kind of the designer, and they had a GM running the company, but he was the chairman of the board. And John said, I'll send you, because he kept bothering them for help, you know, and he said, I'll send you a cadet engineer straight out of university. And that young kid was George Davison. And George went down for 6 months, and 6 years later came back, having basically invented, you know, the whole concept. And when I say invented, the jet boat, not the pump, because the pump, that's Archimedes, if you really want to go all the way back.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, but the concept of putting propulsion into a boat in this nature is definitely, you know, that's the jet boat is what he invented. He did actually invent the concept of steering the water. So the water propulsion we get is Newton's third law. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So you blast the water that way, boat goes that way. But how do you steer it? There's no rudder, so we steer the water. And that's all we're doing. So that was a patent that he put on. And then later on, the patent with the bucket coming over the back was something that, well, there was a bit of a fight over that, but basically that was, you know, that was the next step. And yeah, I guess so from there, George never made, took any of the accolade for the work, but it was him that came up with the concept of this jet unit, the actual flow. He turned it from being a centrifugal pump, which the early Quinet jet units were. There were 7 of those, and then the Rainbow unit, which was they had about 100 of those. But this was the breakthrough when they went to axial flow, because they got good volume, and they could, you know, none of the previous jet boats could have done what these boats did. Yeah.
Well, now forgive me if this is a really basic question, but how does this make going upstream easier than having a prop?
Shallow water.
So these can go in shallow water.
Oh yeah,
water.
4 inches.
So they ride higher.
4 inches. Now see, all boats ride high.
Okay.
When they're at speed, any boat that's planing will ride high, especially if it's a flattish bottom like that.
Okay.
But what happens is you've usually got a propeller hanging down the bottom, you know, the leg and a propeller, and that's the bit that gets hit on the rocks or in the shallows. But in this, when you run over shallow water, all you've actually got to do, if you see shallow water coming up, you just go, ooh, that's shallow, is you take your foot off the accelerator, so you stop sucking water in, which means also you're not going to suck stones in, because that's how you do run aground. You suck stones in and you stop, and then you've got to find 2 foot of water to get going again.
Okay.
But yeah, so you arrive at a shallow bit of water, lift your foot off, and you'll get the hydraulic effect of the boat pushing against the bottom of the riverbed will give it a bit of lift, and it'll actually, its momentum will carry it over, often carry it over and back into deep water, accelerate again, you start pumping water out, because you've now got deeper, you know, in deeper water, and you keep going.
Okay, so it is the damage to the props, but this is also can go shallower.
It's because, that's right, the jet pump is basically putting the propeller and impeller inside the boat and bringing the water through the hole in the bottom and out the back. So if you have a look in the back of this one, just jump up on there and I'll show you what I'm talking about. talking about.
Tree
right,
nut.
And there's nothing sticking down to get knocked
so,
off.
So under there is a hole, right? And it's got a grill in it to stop big rocks coming up. But the water goes up that tube, up into that tube and out the back. And at the back it gets narrowed down and compressed.
Mm-hmm.
So that compression is what gives us our pressure, right? So the impellers inside are turning and they force the water that way, compresses it down, which gives it velocity out the back, which gives us boat heading that direction. So water's propelled that way. And the faster we turn that, the more water goes out, the quicker we'll go. So our steering comes, you have no steering in a boat like this unless you have accelerator.
Oh, okay,
right?
Okay.
And
that's
one of the really critical things, you know, and it's a combination of accelerator and steering that will give it drive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
one of the things I found really neat about this boat was its ability to go over rocks.
Yeah, the problem, Tom, is that yes, it goes over rocks, but it'll still do damage to the hull, as we've seen from we read.
Mm.
So the idea is not to put it over rocks if you can help it.
Right.
But if you do, there's nothing underneath that's going to get ripped off
exactly.
to stop your forward momentum. So the only thing that stopped their forward momentum was one sinking, and nothing can be done about that. But every time we read got hit, or she hit rocks, they managed to get it to the side because they still had propulsion. They got it to the side and they did the patch up to get her back in the game.
There was a letter from Bill Austin to Doc Marston. Austin had just come back from running the salmon in the Pacific Northwest, and he had talked about just parking the boat in a rapid, not worried about the rocks because who cared, waiting until he could power up.
Yeah, that's right.
And I just thought, what a great concept as far as...
So what you're doing is you're just holding, you're literally, you're almost holding on the plane. So you've got to be going at speed to be on top of the water. But if the water's going with enough velocity, it actually doesn't take much for you to get to literally lift up out of the water.
Mm.
So a lot of the technique that we'd use, we would rarely go downstream before we went upstream, if you could help it. Because going upstream, you can, if you come up to a rock garden... you can pull up and you can literally nudge your way through it. You're literally walking pace. You can just literally nudge your way through and go, yep, we're fine here. And because the boat's down a little bit in the water, you get an idea of how deep it is. If you hit something, you go, better not go up there, and you back out of it. If you're at the top and coming down, you've got to go quickly because you need to be on top of the water. You've got the speed of the water as well, so you're going faster. Reactions are slower, the steering's slower. So as soon as you hit something... It's you ricochet off something. Yeah, it's usually pretty untidy.
Well, and I'm sorry with these basic questions,
no.
But if it takes a day and a half to get up over lava falls or Vulcan, what are you doing
okay.
in it? Is it finding the right route,
no,
or is
that,
it
that
just...
that was simply the ferocity of the water?
Yeah, okay.
That is some of the most ferocious water that I've ever seen a jet boater in.
Okay.
There's no question that John. You know, he had an immense reputation, and you know, like, a pretty difficult for him because, you know, like, he was the son of the inventor.
Sure.
Nobody else was around that was doing that stuff, and so he was the first of those people, you know, the first of the jet boaters to really learn how to drive adventure boating, we call it, or whitewater boating. And he continually would get hit, and part of it, you know, if we went up in a boat today, it'd be a much more sophisticated engine and jet unit.
Mm-hmm.
And if we went through the same water, it'd be
well.
An aluminium hull for a start off.
Okay.
Aluminium
but
hull.
But
aluminium.
No.
But I think too why they took so long was because the water's so churning, because like, and they're holding, because sometimes there's literally a hole in front of you, and they don't want to power over that, because if they power over the hole, the nose will go down, and that's when they slice into that in the water. So they will wait.
And that's right.
They will wait for the water, literally a tongue, to come to them that they can shoot up.
Rapids have a pattern, and any boater will tell you that, and it's a matter of reading the pattern. And sometimes you sit there and watch it, and you can say, every 45 seconds, there is a smaller gap with a bigger tongue that I can reach. And the trick is, these are 18-foot boats, so this is big water. I mean, we do the same thing in little 15-foot boats. And the trick is, and, you know, I poke the nose under myself, and you know, you call it, you know, you cut a greenie, you cut through the top of a green wave and it literally rolls down the deck, up the deck and over you, you know, like it just fills the boat.
Mm.
So you have to be really careful. It's a very easy way. Come up like that, and if the wave's sitting here and you don't get the nose to there, and the nose is there, that wave grabs the nose and does that, and the boat goes over like that quick, and it's gone. And it's incredible that they didn't lose one in lava.
Yeah.
But the fact that Guy Mannering, who would be one of the, again, a very, very accomplished boater, bought the second jet boat ever, and even, you know, he was a photographer and filmmaker, but he was a very, very good boater. The fact that he couldn't get one of these boats up the rapid, and John had to eventually, that speaks volumes of how tough that water, that piece of water is.
So you're both waiting for the right time,
yep,
depending on what the water's doing, but then also,
yep,
getting the right power at the right,
yes,
time to,
yep,
to get up over,
yep,
this
and
way.
Trying to miss rocks.
And trying to miss rocks.
Yeah. and have you seen any of the footage that of going up there from?
We did watch it,
yeah,
once.
If you have a look back at it now, we've had this conversation,
okay,
you'll have a whole different perspective,
sure,
on it, because you'll be looking and going, oh wow, I see it. And I just see John struggling in there trying to get through. He gets up to a certain point and can't get any further because he's got no more horsepower, and horsepower comes from turning green water, solid green water, and you get thrust from that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've got aerated water, it's like a slipping clutch in a stick shift.
Okay.
It's like a slipping clutch,
okay,
and you sit there revving. So a lot of the time he could be on full power but getting no thrust because there's so much aeration,
okay. Okay.
And that's the trouble. The more turbulence, the more aeration, the less likely.
The green water.
So
the
they're
green
looking for green water, and a big tongue of water is what you know, you're looking at that going, I need to get to that because as soon as I land on that, I've got thrust, and it might be steeper, but it's green water. You hit it,
okay,
the jet unit will bite, and it will lift out.
Okay.
But if it's all white water, that's the toughest thing in white water. That's the toughest thing in terms of forward propulsion.
Gotcha. Mm. And so you mentioned already, but like the improvements you've made since this point, one is making them out of aluminum.
Yep.
Any other, or is it
better horsepower motor?
Better,
like you talk about a 185 horsepower motor.
Yeah.
The motors that they run and they're putting in the boats now, the standard pleasure boat motors could be 600 horsepower.
Oh, okay.
Like they're all big LS3s, LS86s. Oh yeah, and they'll be lighter than that because they'll be all aluminum blocks. So they'll be a lighter engine. Power to weight ratio will be better because fiberglass will be heavier, and jet units have look. Yeah, this is a great unit, don't get me wrong, but this is the late 1950s engineering, and you know, like today, even the jet unit that comes 2-3 models after this, Hamilton's no longer produced, and somebody else has grabbed it and turned it into an even better unit than Hamilton's have.
Okay.
So when Hamiltons want a small unit, they go to this particular manufacturer to use that unit to fit into a small boat if they want it, because they've done so much more to it.
Okay.
And that's just about, you know, thinking and understanding and being able to put water flow and do proper computer testing, all that,
mm-hmm,
kind of stuff. It's come a long way. Yeah.
And you said they're smaller, so they're smaller and more powerful.
This would be the size of, like, something this size you'd use commercially, wouldn't it?
Yeah, like
with,
we, yeah. Well, actually, so what's 18 feet in, what's 18 feet in metres?
About
5?
4.5? No. 5 metres is 15. So 6 metres, okay, so 5.5, yeah, so it's 5 point, it's nearly 6 metres long.
Hmm.